Price, that's the number one technical indicator.
You do best by investing for the longer term.
If you can't explain what the business is doing, then that is a huge red flag.
Some technological change is going to put you out of business.
It really is a genuinely extraordinary situation.
Hi, everyone. Ed Gotham here. And welcome to another episode of Opto Sessions, where we interview the top traders and investors from around the world, uncovering their secrets to success. On the podcast today, I have the pleasure of interviewing entrepreneur and growth stock investor Jonah Lupton. He's nurtured his own community of over 500,000 stock market enthusiasts with a very popular Substack email list, where he gives subscribers in-depth reports and insights into his new and existing growth stock positions. He's also currently one of the 8 chosen for the Social Capital Emerging Managers class of 2021, created by the one and only Chamath. In this interview, though, we discuss his strategy for finding emerging innovative companies that have the potential for triple-digit returns over the next 4 to 5 years. We also dig into some of his highest conviction positions and the catalysts for their outperformance. Enjoy the show. Jonah, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast. How are you doing today?
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
A bit of an interesting day to do the podcast as well. The markets are going all over the place at the moment.
Yeah, these days just annoy me.
Yeah, you're saying, I think I was following you on Twitter. The two reasons why they annoy you was, one was all the the messages you get from other investors, like panic selling potentially.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people that are out there that have never been through a bear market, pullbacks, volatility. You know, they jumped into the markets a year ago and they've only seen the market going up. And I try to be open and transparent with people, and I try to give advice, you know, although nothing specific. But when these days happen, I get dozens, if not hundreds, of messages and emails from people that have no idea what to do, which is scary. You know, I mean, they should not be managing their capital if they are. Every time they, you know, the stock goes down, they're ready to sell everything and go to cash. That is just a horrible way to manage your money.
Yeah. But unfortunately, the way most retail investors probably approach it.
Yep. Most retail investors are very bad at investing because they get very emotional and panicky, and they like to buy when everything looks good, and they like to sell when everything looks bad. And that's the wrong way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, your second point as well is that you didn't have enough cash to, you know, on days like this to buy more, basically, because everything's on sale.
Oh, yeah. These are my favorite days to buy. I mean,
yeah.
I prefer to buy stocks when they're in the red, not in the green.
No, it's really interesting. I wanted to start just by asking, what do you consider your edges in investing? Your source of alpha, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, so my strategy over the last year has changed. I mean, last March, when we got the pandemic and everybody was stuck at home, you know, it became pretty clear to me and lots of others on Twitter that, you know, you were going to start to see an acceleration in certain trends like e-commerce and digital payments and telehealth, you know, cloud and infrastructure, you know, meaning internet infrastructure. And so that's where I was positioning my portfolio, is to take advantage of those trends. And for the most part, it worked pretty well. I was actually trimming stocks too much because I wasn't used to, you know, seeing stocks go up 50% in a month or two. So, you know, just based on my experience, you know, normally when stocks go up 50% in a month, you trim them because that's not normal. But, you know, as we all know, looking back, a lot of those stocks went up 50%, which was just the beginning. And some of them went up 200, 300, 400% last year before it was all done, like Zoom and Peloton and Fiverr and some others. So, you know, in most cases, I actually hurt myself with my trimming strategy. But, you know, that's how I manage risk in my portfolio, especially when I'm on margin. And then as we got toward the end of last year, I just felt like there were a lot of COVID winners or pandemic winners, you know, that had seen massive multiple expansion to the extent where you just couldn't, I can't justify paying 40 times sales for 40% future revenue growth. You know, let's take Cloudflare or Fastly or CrowdStrike. great companies. They all did very well for me last year, but they were all trading at nosebleed valuations, in my opinion. And I don't mind paying up for growth. I mean, my entire portfolio is full of high growth, high multiple stocks. But if I'm going to pay times sales for a company, I better get 80, 90% growth out of it. That's how I look at things. You know, I have no problem paying high multiples, but it all has to, you know, be, I don't know, rational, I suppose. And so over the last 3 months, I've repositioned my portfolio, and I've basically gotten rid of every single one of my stocks from last year. And I've been building a portfolio of smaller stocks, mostly under 10 billion, although I'd say at least half of my portfolio was under 5 billion. And I'm looking for companies that are growing revenues at least 30% for the next 2 or 3 years. So sustainable revenue growth above 30%. Although I will say most of my stocks are above 50%, and then a handful of them are over 100, 200%. But, you know, those are companies that are much smaller. So they're starting at a much lower base in terms of current revenue. So it's obviously easier, you know, it's easier to get 200% revenue growth when you're starting at 5 million versus 5 billion. So, you know, which is the case in like Dermtech. So I look for companies under 5 or 10 billion market cap growing at least 30% for the next few years, reasonable valuations, low analyst coverage. So, you know, one of the nice things about these small caps and mid caps is that the big Wall Street firms aren't necessarily covering them. You know, you might have 45 analysts that cover Facebook. You might have 3 analysts that cover Dermtech or Upstart, or in some cases, none, because they're recent SPACs and the analysts haven't even picked up coverage yet. So, you know, no one's really paying attention to some of these companies like Mohawk that I got into back in December, you know, had like 2 analysts covering it. So there's just a ton of opportunity out there to find these companies that Wall Street hasn't started paying attention to yet, and then get into them at reasonable valuations with some sort of an upcoming catalyst. You know, either a new product launch or, maybe an acquisition or, you know, FDA approval for something, or in the case of Dermtech, like Blue Cross Blue Shield, you know, picking up coverage for all their members. So things like that would obviously put the stock on the radar of the big funds and get some multiple expansion and get that stock price moving higher.
Okay. So you're getting in this early stage, basically, before the big money's been interested, and you ride that sort of growth up when they start putting some proper money into it.
Correct. Yep. But I mean, most of these stocks that I'm getting into now, you know, I would say last year I was more of an opportunistic investor, you know, looking at the trends and playing those trends. And then when I thought those trends were, you know, coming to an end, you know, jumping out before the multiple started to contract. You know, now that I'm looking at the smaller caps, market caps under 5 billion, I just think these are stocks that are in the, you know, the early days, the infancy of their hyper growth. So these are companies that I want to get in now and hold them for the next 3 to 5 years and grow with them. And, you know, obviously with those types of companies selling at high multiples, high growth rates, you know, 1 month they're going to be in favor, the next month they'll be out of favor. So you're going to get plenty of pullbacks along the way, and, you know, or even stock offerings, you know, because a lot of these companies are still losing money as they're, you know, growing and launching new products and, you know, trying to take market share. They're going to lose money for the first 3 or 4 years doing that. And they'll have to issue some, you know, some new stock along the way to raise capital. And that's fine. Those are typically buying opportunities for me.
And do you have, is there sort of a minimum market cap you sort of aim for as well? Did they have to sort of like prove themselves to a certain extent first?
I mean, so if I wasn't as transparent as I am on Twitter, and for people that don't know, if you actually go to my Twitter account, my pinned tweet is a Google sheet where I actually post my portfolio, my entire portfolio, including the allocations. So I hold myself, you know, I'm not just transparent, but I hold myself accountable.
Yeah.
So that people can see exactly what I own and, you know, how large that position is in my portfolio. Now, if I wasn't being that transparent, I would probably invest in even smaller companies. The challenge is that because I'm so transparent, and a lot of people do follow my, you know, my portfolio and just buy my stocks without even doing their own due diligence, but I know that. So I do manage my portfolio with that in mind, knowing that I could move stocks if I wanted to, but I'm not trying to do that. So I don't want an entire portfolio of small cap or micro cap illiquid names.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
So I do try to stay above 250 million, which is still pretty small in the world of public equities. 250 million is pretty small. So a lot of times when I do add a new position and then I mention it on Twitter or my stock twits room, you know, the stock is going to move 5 or 10%, but I mean, there's nothing I can do about that. I mean, I have to manage my portfolio, you know, and do what's best for me and focus on my performance. And if people are going to chase me into stocks or, you know, chase stocks up, I mean, that's their own business.
Yeah.
I can't control that. And I think some people are smartening up to that and realizing that there's an initial pop when I first mentioned a stock, and then knowing that it's going to pull back maybe the next day, you know, as some of the froth comes out, and then that's when they're going to get a better chance to buy it. So, you know, you see that with my Substack newsletter. When the newsletter goes out, the stock pops 10% in the first 5 minutes, and then it pulls back. So I think people will start to get a little bit wiser about, you know, how to build a portfolio that looks more like mine. Not that I necessarily want anybody to or need them to, but I do feel like we're living in a world now where, you know, people appreciate transparency and accountability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. And yeah, so you're a longer term investor, I believe that's right. That's, you know, focus on these early stage growth stocks. Almost feels like, you know, you're a venture capital firm sort of investing in later stage startups, sort of possible now on the public markets to sort of approach it in that way. And what's your process for finding these stocks? I mean, the universe is massive.
Right.
You've mentioned a few things, you know, revenue growth, but in particular, it seems like you're always focused on like heavy innovation. But any other criteria you use to find these companies?
So, I mean, just backing up to your last point, I mean, I do think that, you know, being the sort of investor that I am and investing in these younger, smaller companies, I do think I am sort of playing the role of a late stage VC, because in some cases, especially with a lot of these SPACs that are coming public, you know, in reverse mergers, you know, these private companies would, you know, before the SPAC craze or SPAC mania, these companies would stay private another 3 or 4 years and raise another two or three rounds of capital. And instead of coming public now in the, you know, via SPAC at $2 billion, we'd see them in 2025 at $10 billion. And all of that excess, you know, those excess returns would have gone to the VC firms and their limited partners. And I think now retail investors have an opportunity to invest in some of these companies while they're still accelerating growth. So I do think it's really exciting. In terms of, I already forget the second part of the question.
Just your process criteria for discovering these equities.
Yeah, I mean, I would say 6 months ago, it was a lot of FinTwit and then doing stock screeners on my own. And I think over the last 2 months, as I've developed relationships and friendships on Twitter and then also in stock twits, you know, there's a lot of really smart people that have, you know, joined my room and follow me on Twitter and send me messages and send me emails. You know, some of them are just individual retail investors. Some of them are fund managers, hedge fund guys, retired hedge fund guys, retired endowment guys that just do it for fun now. And they're all doing the same thing as I am. I mean, they're looking for growth stocks too and opportunities. And then once they find these stocks, they're looking for a way to, you know, bring some attention and awareness to them. And that's kind of where I can help out. So a lot of my best ideas recently, whether it's DermTech or Upstart or even Mohawk, I mean, these were stocks that were, you know, that someone messaged me about and said, hey, you know, this is a company I've been in for the last few months. I've done my research. Here's my write-up. I've talked to the CEO. I'm a, you know, former employee. I mean, you know, a lot of different scenarios. And, you know, there's some people out there that have really helped me find these companies, and I'm extremely grateful.
Yeah. So it's very social driven discovery, basically.
You know, I'm a one man shop. So, you know, I can't keep tabs on all these stocks by myself. Sometimes you have to build a little army to help you.
But how do you give it the rubber stamp yourself? Like what, so you must get given a lot of names, and what are you looking for that shows you that, you know, this is a quality company that has big potential?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely have to understand the company. I mean, there's definitely a few companies in my portfolio that, I couldn't stand up in front of a room of 500 people and give a 30-minute talk on the company. You know, one of those is ClearPoint Neuro, which is, I mean, it's almost hard to explain, but I've had a couple neurosurgeons, you know, pop into my DMs and tell me about how exciting this company is and their technology. And it's sort of like the Intuitive Surgical, but for brain surgery, because it allows the neurosurgeon to see what they're doing on an MRI screen so that they know where they're actually injecting the drugs into the brain. I mean, it's crazy. Like, some of the stuff is just really over my head. I mean, so it'll never be a top 10 position in my portfolio, but I've read enough about the company, gone through some of their, you know, their data, their clinical trials, talked to neurosurgeons, that I'm at least comfortable enough to have a small position. And then there's other companies that I've done, you know, deep dive write-ups on. I've talked to people at the company. I've talked to other investors like DermTech and Upstart. And those are companies that I really understand. And that's where I'm more comfortable, you know, having a larger percentage of my portfolio in those names. Yeah. I mean, I do run a pretty diversified portfolio. So if you look at my entire portfolio, it's, I think as of today, it's about 50 stocks. But the top 10 positions are at least 50% of my portfolio. Yeah. So I'm always going to weight my portfolio towards the stocks that I think give me not just the most upside, but also the least downside, mm-hmm. you know, where there's the most attractive risk and return profile, as I like to say. So, you know, the stocks that I think can, you know, the best chance of going 5X or 10X over the next 5 years with limited downside because they've already gotten through, you know, the FDA trials or the insurance coverage yep. or, you know, whatever the case might be.
We hope you're enjoying the episode. For interviews like this every Thursday, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, make sure you give us a star rating and leave guest suggestions along with any other feedback in the review section. Now, back to the show.
And do you have an exit strategy? You're saying, so you got, you know, around about 5 years is what you're looking at to gain. You're saying sort of 5X is your sort of target.
Yeah. So, I mean, I go into a stock, or at least I think I'm going into a stock with the intention of holding for at least 2 or 3 years, maybe longer. I mean, it's hard to say. I don't think anybody should ever get married to their yeah. stock. So I kind of just say that I'm not married to my stocks. I'm just dating them. And if something changes, then, you know, I should get rid of the stock, whether it's something in the fundamentals sometimes you just lose interest in companies. You know, you've owned it for 6 months. Maybe it's made money for you. Maybe it hasn't. Maybe you're just kind of sick of looking at it in yeah. your portfolio. You've just kind of lost patience. You know, maybe other investors, you know, you think the stock is undervalued, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you think. It's what the overall market thinks. And sometimes you're just wrong and you have to admit that you're wrong. And maybe you overvalued the stock or you thought you saw something that others would appreciate and the market just hasn't appreciated it. And, you know, it's better to cut your losses or, you know, move on from the stock. So I'll do that from time to time. And then also, you know, a couple of days ago, the markets were really volatile and we got that massive sell-off in the morning and my portfolio was down double digits. And that's typically, those are the days where I'm going to trim my portfolio and get rid of my least favorite 3 or 4 stocks to raise some cash that I can add to my favorite stock.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, interesting.
So, you know, that's over the last couple of days, as we've seen an increase in volatility, I've sold 4 or 5 stocks. So if I had, you know, 55 a couple of days ago, now I'm down to 50. So, you know, I've trimmed the bottom 10% of my portfolio. And those are companies that I might get back into over the next month or so. But right now, I just, you know, when you're going through this excess volatility and you want to bet on your, you know, your highest conviction yeah. names. So that's what I'm trying to do right now.
So let's dive into a few of the top holdings. You've mentioned it already. So DermTech is your top holding at the moment.
Yep. So I forget who put the company on my radar, but I'm glad they did, because honestly, as soon as I started to dig into the company, I just realized how much potential there was with this particular company just on what they're doing. So there's 3 main forms of skin cancer. Melanoma is one of them. And traditionally, you know, the way that they detect melanoma is you get a biopsy, you know, they're cutting out your mole, and then they're analyzing it and telling you if there's anything suspicious. Well, what DermTech did was create this genomics smart patch, or a sticker, as some people call it, where the dermatologist basically rubs it over your mole and it's extracting skin cells that you obviously can't see. You know, we're talking like microscopic skin cells.
Yeah.
And then those patches or stickers are then mailed back to the company's lab in California, and they're analyzed with computers and lasers, and they're able to detect, you know, with a 99% accuracy, if there's anything, you know, in your RNA of your skin cells that you should be concerned about, that might mean that there is some, you know, melanoma. And that's just a total game. When you think about the millions of biopsies that are done every year and the overwhelming majority come back negative, you know, those people theoretically didn't need to get a biopsy.
So it's a non-invasive method, basically.
So yeah. Exactly. So non-invasive, it's more accurate. And then it's probably going to open up the market of people that would otherwise not go to the doctor because they didn't want to get a biopsy. They didn't want to have a scalpel, you know, tear into them. And there's sort of like a DTC, you know, direct to consumer component to this at some point where, you know, I could go onto the DermTech website, I could order the patch. I would get reimbursed by my insurance carrier. And now these people are being more proactive in their health. So that's just really cool to me.
This is
the sort of stock I think has enormous upside over the next 5 to 10 years as they become kind of the standard of care.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's very, really interesting. It does seem like healthcare innovation is going to be big for the next 10 years. And
huge.
You've actually got, so another one in your its top holdings is Transmedics Group.
Yep. So another one. So this actually came from a cardiologist that dropped into my DMs and said, "You got to check out this company. What they're doing is so cool. It's going to be a game changer. They're gonna save a lot of lives." So I looked into it, and you know, when you're talking, you know, organ donors and whatnot. So someone dies either from brain death or circulatory death, and you know, those organs start to die right away. And those organs are typically, they're harvested from the donor and they're put into a plastic bag and then put on ice and then into a picnic cooler and then transported to the recipient. But you obviously have a finite amount of time because as soon as that organ is harvested and put in the cooler, it starts to die. So the longer that cooler takes, or the longer that organ takes to get transplanted into the recipient, you know, the lower the chances are that that organ is going to be usable by the time it arrives, and that it's not going to be rejected by the body. But what Transmedics has done is created these machines, which they call OCS units, which stands for Organ Care System. And the organs get harvested, they get put into this machine right away, and the machine actually keeps those organs alive because it's pumping them with blood and nutrients and oxygen. So now instead of having just a couple hours to get that organ into the recipient, now you have 12 or 15 hours. So it's just a total game changer. You know, now we're going to save more lives. We're going to, you know, we increase the size of the donor pool because now you can open up the market to circulatory death instead of just brain death. And instead of the donor and recipient having to be just a few hours away from each other, now they can be 10 or 15 hours away from each other. So now you can do, you know, coast to coast. You can get on an airplane with this machine because they're totally mobile. Like it's such an incredible breakthrough technology that not only can I get excited about the company, what they're doing and make money, but I could also just, you know, be just super ambitious on their mission and knowing that this company is going to save lives with their technology. And that's kind of how I feel about, you know, DermTech and a few of my other companies. You know, I mean, like Celsius is another one of my big stocks, you know, it's energy drinks. Like, are they saving lives or making humanity better? Probably not. But some of my stocks, I can get really excited about them because of what they're doing in terms of, you know, saving lives, making humanity better, or making the planet better. So that's kind of like, that's part of my investment strategy. It's not my only, you know, like at the end of the day, I need to focus on performance and making money for myself and, you know, any investors that I end up managing money for in the future. Like, performance is always most important, I think. But if you can make money in stocks that are also doing good, I think it makes this job more fun.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Especially for individual, do it yourself, feels a lot better. And even it's a big trend in retail investment to invest in, you know, ECG and companies that are doing good, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. absolutely. So I think, you know, ESG companies will probably start trading at premiums above non-ESG companies, because you're just going to have so many institutional investors, you know, pension plans, endowments, foundations, they're going to focus exclusively on ESG companies.
Yeah, of course.
So, you know, that's going to be, you know, a lot of your healthcare, your medical device companies, of course, but then also, like, you know, your EV companies and, you know, clean tech and stuff like that. So AppHarvest is another one of my big companies, AppHarvest and Danimer. So AppHarvest is what I call creating the future of farming, where, you know, we think about farming right now. We think about, you know, fields, outside, dirt, sun, you know, insects, pesticides. You know, you can only grow certain times of the year when the weather is perfect. And then you look at AppHarvest and you're like, oh my God, they're doing all of this indoors. It's basically a big, you know, technology advanced greenhouse, vertical farming. And now you can build these farms, these indoor farms, anywhere you want in any region. So you could have one in the Northeast, you know, which is typically not a great, you know, like I'm in the Boston area. You typically don't see many farms in the Boston area because the winters are so bad, you can't grow, you know, half of the year. But indoor farming, you can create the perfect environment, the perfect weather, the perfect humidity, no insects, no pesticides, very, you know, energy efficient, water efficient. You get a 30x crop yield, which is insane. So yeah, that to me is exciting. If you can invest in companies like this that are going to, you know, increase the food supply for our country and make us a little bit more self-sufficient.
Yeah, of course. I find it so interesting that, well, Lisa, it sounds like quite a few of your investments have come sort of been validated by people on the ground using these, you know, whatever have it be, the, you know, things, the medical innovation, etc.
Right. So one of the things that I do focus on when I'm investing in SPACs is, and a lot of these companies that I just mentioned were recent SPAC deals. You know, I focus on who the management team is behind the SPAC, you know, what's their background, what's their expertise. You know, for instance, I just did a stock write-up a couple of days ago on Owlet, O-W-L-E-T, which is a company out of Utah. And what they did was, you know, this is going back 8 years when they first started the company, but they created a smart sock for babies. So it's literally like a sock, like a Bluetooth-enabled smart sock or wearable that you put on the baby's foot, and it's able to monitor their, you know, their heart rate or blood pressure, as well as their oxygen levels. And this enables the parent to, you know, probably feel a little bit less stressed knowing that they can monitor their baby's vitals. And if anything is wrong, they're going to get an alert on their phone or this, you know, this base that you can keep next to your bed. So when you wake up in the middle of the night, you just look over, and if the base is green, it means everything's all right with your baby. If it's orange or red, you know, there's something to worry about. And that company, for instance, got taken public by a SPAC called Sandbridge. And the guys and gals behind Sandbridge are like very well-known, like a consumer products private equity group. So they really know the landscape. They know the industry. They have, you know, all the retail distribution contacts. And, you know, when they did their webcast, when they announced the deal, you know, they talked about looking at over 50 different companies that, you know, that they wanted to, you know, because they had obviously a list of criteria, and they looked at 50 different companies, and they said by far and away, Owlet was the one that really stood out as having the most potential over the next 5 or 10 years. And I believe them. Like when I look at this company and I'm thinking, you know, just like Peloton is building this fitness ecosystem, I think Owlet has a chance to build this kind of baby tech / connected nursery ecosystem with all of these products to make, you know, to make lives easier and less stressful for parents.
Yeah. Awesome, Jonah. That's been brilliant. Just one last question before we sort of like wrap up. What's the most important lesson you've learned in investing over the last year? If you can sort of pull one learning out.
So I think today, days like today, or even a couple of days ago when the markets have big sell-offs, don't panic. You know what you own, do your due diligence, you know, your research on companies before you start positions. Because if you don't really know what you own, when the stock goes down, you're not really, you're going to get scared. But if you know the company well enough, yeah, and you believe in the story and the fundamentals, and you think that you got in a fair valuation, then there's really nothing to be worried about. Like, I get annoyed on these big red days because obviously we all like to make money. I mean, it's more fun to be an investor when your stocks, yeah, are going up and you're seeing your account value increase. But like at the end of the day, I mean, I'm not buying DermTech and Mohawk and Transmedics to make money today or tomorrow, because it's not like I'm selling it anytime soon. So like, these days are annoying, mm-hmm, but like, you need to focus on the fundamentals and the valuation and, you know, buying great stocks and owning them for the next 2, 3, 4 years. And if you can keep that mindset, you'll do fine and you'll destroy the indexes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, that mindset is just getting over that human psychology element that's present, isn't it, when you're investing. But yeah, I mean, great advice.
It's obviously, you know, you it's always nice to have some cash, you know, sitting around so that you can buy on these big red days. But, you know, assuming that you do have a little bit of cash, you know, these are the sorts of days when you want to be buying, you know, when, yeah, others are panicking and selling. You know, that's the chance. That's your chance to go in and buy some of your favorite stocks that are on sale, you know, 5, 10, 15% discounts.
Yeah, thanks very much, Jonah. And just before you sign off, where should people go to follow your insights and any last messages you got for the community here?
Yeah, so I do a lot of posting on Twitter. That's probably where I'm the most active right now, and I have a decent following. But I also write, like I mentioned earlier, this Substack newsletter that I started a few months ago. So if you go to my Twitter profile, you'll actually see a link to my Substack in my bio. But if you don't want to go there, it's Jonah Lupton. So it's my first name, last name, jonahlupton.substack.com. And you can sign up for free, or you can sign up for a paid subscription, and you get one deep dive write-up every week on one of my favorite growth stocks at that particular time.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Jonah. It's been a pleasure having you on the show, and really good to get your insight. I think it's rare to see investors nowadays that are putting so much time into these sort of innovative companies. And yeah, really good advice for the community. Thanks very much, man.
You got it, man. Anytime. Talk to you soon.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Just a quick note before we sign off. If you're looking for an easily digestible daily update on the markets, this might be of interest. Opto Updates is our short newsletter sent every day during the trading week, giving you a bulleted list of the top 7 stories from the global stock markets. We've done the hard work for you, highlighting relevant opportunities and trends. And in addition, we'll also keep you notified of any new products, stock reports, or webinars from the Opto world. If you're interested, sign up using the link in the show notes. And thanks also to CoFruition for consulting on and producing the show. Until next time.